We all know that cars mean traffic, errands, and budgets.
But they should also represent freedom and fun. Join us as we work to find everyone a car they'll love. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
So we just went to dinner, and I'm actually wondering about getting a 996 now after riding in yours. By the way, thank you for being back on the podcast. Chance is back while Todd is away. He is editing our film, our Corvette film, because it needs a lot of edit work to meet the picture lock cutoff so we can get the color and mix done and then get it out to all of you guys. So thanks for being with us. Happy Tuesday. Chance is back with me for a Topic Tuesday.
Yes, I am. And Todd is, you know, locked in a closet somewhere, just slaving away. I mean, he has working so hard. And I can relate because I did a lot of the initial cutting of the interviews. And
yeah.
It took a lot of time, just what I was doing. So, he's doing a lot.
Yeah.
It's looking great.
It's looking great. It's just, it's beating on all of us. And it continues up to the very end for audio stuff that we've been missing, interior shots that we're missing. Anyway, I'm going to let you guys decide when the film comes out. We're going to be very proud of it. But it remains one of those things. It's just a fight to the very end. I still can't believe it.
Yeah. We were just counting. We had, three fires, near misses with animals. We won't spoil it all, but there's a lot
of
stuff.
We'll do a debrief on the film, probably, hopefully with all of us, including Edgar, and maybe we can get Ben on as well. But we'll get everybody on and kind of talk through once the film drops here in another couple of weeks. But we will definitely keep you posted and let you know where all the outlets of the film will be. It will initially be a premiere here in Park City. And if you're listening to this and you are local, or if you want to fly in, that's fine too. We'd love to have you at the premiere. It is at the Park City Public Library at the Jim Santee Auditorium on December 15th. And it's about from 1 to 4 p.m. So we'll start the film about 2 p.m. And it's going to be a good length too. We've got a lot of cars to get through.
Yeah, and it's
13 cars.
It's a Sundance venue too, so it's not just some little tiny little theater. It's a pretty legit theater.
It is. It's a great theater. It probably seats about 300 people, and we're hoping to have a lot of people show up. So if you're, like I said, listening to this and you want to come, we would love to have you. So we'll be sending out social media and keeping you guys posted as well on that. But I was just thinking about your car riding around in the snow. It is crazy winter here in Park City.
Yeah, we saw -1 degrees outside. I didn't tell you that. We saw -1 on the dash on the way here.
And where you live, it's actually quite a bit lower. I think you guys are at, 4,000 elevation?
Yeah, we're at 4,500. We're 63 here, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, we actually, some of you, if you saw on Instagram, we had a crazy storm yesterday in the valley.
Yeah, you guys had snow.
We had probably about 6 inches at our house.
Yeah,
and I still had the summer tires on, so I quickly drove the car to my driveway, jacked up the car in the snow.
I like how you wait to the very last minute. Oh, it's snowing. I better put on the winter tires.
The storm came out of nowhere. I was planning on doing it this weekend anyways.
Sure,
and then it's just, there's a lot of snow on the ground this morning. Cool.
No, I'm glad that worked. I'm thinking about your car. I keep wanting a 928, but now riding in your car just does great.
It's been pretty awesome.
I mean, the all-wheel drive thing's cool, but you've got the winter tires on, it just goes.
The check engine light did come on the way here.
I think it's not used to the altitude and the cold.
That's what I'm hoping.
So we've got a Topic Tuesday. This is from David E. He's writing to us recently asking about what to buy if enthusiast cars are becoming niche and everything's going to, the larger CUVs, larger SUVs. He's wondering what kind of sports cars should we be scooping up and driving and cherishing? And he says he's pretty much decided against an 86 and a BRZ in favor of a more practical car. Although you had an 86, both you and Todd had 86s. And
No, he said he was deciding against it. Oh, yeah, he was. I just read that last time.
You're right. You found it pretty practical, actually.
I did. That's the whole reason why I got the 86 or the BRZ over a Miata was because it had a back seat. And a bigger trunk.
And, pretty and decent
I
trunk,
fit.
Actually, right? Yeah.
I had knee room in that car.
Yeah, right. Well, he says, what if we're entering this dark time for enthusiast cars like we did in the mid-70s, like a Mustang 2?
Yeah.
So what should the enthusiast shopping list be for the heyday of sports cars? Well, if the heyday of sports cars under $30,000 and that's gone. Todd and I have been alluding to this for a little while with the advent of CUVs. And I keep hearing it. I actually just had a friend talk to me about a BMW X5. And he said he's really interested in the new X5. And I'm thinking, okay.
Yeah, they're nice.
Can't go wrong. I mean, they're great. I have my personal nitpicks with them. But no cars were being considered. There's no cars to be considered on this list because stuff to carry around, you want a four-wheel drive, you want space for people and airport runs and all that kind of stuff.
And you know, that right there
is looking for that.
One of the reasons why Ford and Chevy have dropped a lot of their sedans and coupes, a lot of their small cars.
Yeah, it's just, we've been thinking about this, David. Believe me, we've been mulling this over, and I figure it's a good time to answer this question. And this will be ongoing, as any Topic Tuesday is. It's ongoing. It's,
yeah.
It's, I'm leaving this open for future discussion, but I think I'm gonna say something. I'm gonna make some predictions here, and this is actually comes from my family. My family has a tradition every New Year's. We make predictions for the following year, and we kind of have some fun with it.
Okay.
I mean, we kind of do the easy stuff, whether it's, you know, celebrities or whatever, and then we'll make predictions. You know, we'll say, you know, where do you personally want to be in 1 year, and you see yourself being, you know, either in a personal or emotional spot or whatever that is. And so we make family predictions, and then we read them the next year. So we'll read the previous year's predictions and then make new ones as just kind of a tradition that we started as a family.
It's New Year's resolutions without being New Year's resolutions?
Kind of. I'm going to be, you know, 20 pounds lighter and all this stuff. And so we've had a lot of great laughs because you get an insight into how you were thinking last year time.
That's kind of fun. That's a fun idea.
And then you think, really? That's what I was thinking? That was on my mind? I was concerned about that? Really?
Yeah.
And so we, like I said, we have a lot of fun with it, but we could do it with cars. And I think it does come down to where we're going as an industry. I think it comes down to, well, just a lot of the sales figures that we're seeing. And after going to the LA Auto Show, car companies didn't have their cars out on the floor the first day. They had CUVs and SUVs out there. And it was, I agree, it's a little disheartening, but David, I'm going to start right off and say, I'm going to give you some examples, but I don't think that this is going to ever go away, ever. As an enthusiast, I mean, I'm saying that with a grain of hope, I suppose, but I don't know that this kind of enthusiast car market, it might shrink, it might continue to shrink, but I don't think it's ever going to completely go away because car manufacturers are going to discover, wow, we could actually put a cool new model in this segment and actually kind of be the leaders or a standalone. And it's always the bring the people into the dealerships. Even though I know people are buying CUVs and that's the business case, but I'm saying I don't think it's ever really going to go away. We might measure performance by electric cars and now, you know, electric numbers, I would say, in terms of performance, but I don't think it's ever going to really truly disappear.
Well, you look at like horses. Everyone used to ride horses, you know, 150 years ago.
That was, I mean, they was still your, do.
People do. That's my point. People are still riding horses.
Right.
They're using them differently.
Very true.
But they're still riding horses. People still have that aspiration to owning horses and having horse property and oh, I went horseback riding today, or
right. You don't.
I went and played cowboy or
drive through or anything to get your lattes. But
yeah
I take your point. That'd be kind of interesting, but yeah, they're very much a pleasure pursuit, I guess. From
totally
anything surrounding,
and that's what sports cars are. Equestrian. Even now, they're still a pleasurable pursuit. It's we're going to get that thrill seeking experience.
Yeah, that's
right?
Exactly why we exist, honestly, and that's exactly why we're all looking for that kind of feeling because, honestly, it's just so much fun, even in winter. And so, David, I come to this thinking, all right, it could be disheartening for us to sit here and say, well, yeah, all I see is just these mini CUVs being purchased. The cars are going away. I don't think so, though.
Yeah, it's not all doom and gloom. I mean,
this, I really don't think so.
There's a trend in the market where it's all a lot of CUVs and SUVs and electric vehicles, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, look at what Jeeps are. Those kind of kicked off the SUV, the Jeep Cherokee and the Wagoneer. And look what people use those for. They go rock crawling. They go to Moab and they climb over things. And
I mean, that's, you don't need that. They just go for the fun of it.
Yes,
the challenge, the pursuit. Okay, so I'm going to start off in saying, as the great cars age, all the cool stuff that we like now that is above 30 grand, and I'm speaking really to 30 grand and under. Talk about the Jaguar F-Type, Audi R8s and TTRSs, newer Caymans and 911s, Lotus Evoras, Mustang GT350s, Camaros, and Corvette Z06s. All of these cars are above 30 right now.
Yeah, and a lot of them are dropping fast.
Yeah, this is my point. In we'll say 5 years from now, would you be willing to buy a GT350R with 80,000 miles on it for under 30?
Yeah, probably.
Probably, right?
As long as they prove reliable, yeah, why not?
I would think so. I would think most of the cars on that
list. I'm the guy that bought the 150,000-mile 911.
Oh, you did.
But, you know.
On the other hand, you were just telling me your 996 group has, like, there's guys in there with 400 or 600,000 miles on their 996s.
Yeah, I've seen a few.
Which makes your car sort of, like, just getting started.
It's just warming up, yeah. Hopefully,
so,
hopefully.
My point is, we've got always these exotic and luxury-level cars being introduced that any one of those I would take as an enthusiast car, and they're all going to drop under 30 at some point.
Yeah.
So even though I think, David, you're asking for sort of our all-time greatest hits list, I think for the future of the exotics, I guess, and I don't consider for our budgets like the McLarens and Ferraris and that kind of thing. That's
Those will probably never be down that.
I mean, unattainable,
even,
practically.
Even the like the Countaches and the 308s and those kinds of things that they're low of low were still way out of reach for most people.
Yeah, so I'm saying that these cars are going to drop below 30. Well, so are Hellcats at some point. And, the, you know, anything with Hellcat engine, which is scary. But that's coming. That day is coming.
Yeah, you think Mustangs hit crowds. Wait until you see the Hellcats.
That's a shirt right there. You think Mustangs hit crowds. Wait till there's $25,000 Hellcats everywhere. Right. All right, so under 30 right now, though, I'm looking at these brands. Hyundai N, the N version of any Hyundai coming forth. And a lot of you are asking about various models coming out, and thank you for that. We're watching just as closely as you guys are. We're very excited by this because Mazda Speed has gone away. I think Hyundai is continuing to recognize these niches where car companies have done well and made a name for themselves.
Yeah.
The Mazda Speed name is sort of hallowed ground. It kind of, you know, wow, a Mazda Speed anything. That's kind of a hot, fun car
That's
for
true.
A good price.
And I mean, the N cars are great. You got the 86 on there, the Golf GTIs. Those are all your hatchbacks assortment. But then you look at the rear-wheel drive cars. You got Caymans. You've got Boxsters. Yeah. You've got Boss 302 Mustangs.
That's insane, actually.
You've got, I don't know what Z28s are right now, but those probably can't be that far off. Those plummeted, too.
Which is crazy to me, because they were dealer markup at $80,000 or $90,000.
Yeah.
Just think.
Even, you know, 996s, early 997s are tickling the underbelly of 30 grand now.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Okay, so the Honda Hatches, the Honda S2000, you mentioned the 86, all the Miatas and MX-5s, Mini Coopers. How about the Z32 generation Nissan 300ZX, so early 90s?
Yeah.
BMW 2 Series, Z3, Z4s. And David, my personal favorite on this list is an Acura NSX.
Ooh.
When are those? I found one in the past. You probably heard me, and I can't remember which episode that was, but I found a $31,000 NSX. But there have got to be more NSX coming direction.
I think they're actually on their way up.
Do you?
People have found them and they're kind of on the rise. I was looking at them the other day and I saw multiples in the 50s.
Well, okay, fair enough. But you bought your car, your 996, for what, 15?
Yeah.
Somewhere in there? And you would never think, wow, I could have a 911 for 15 grand?
Yeah. True.
So I take your point. The good ones are going to still probably level out at 40s-ish, but I bet in the 30 to 40 range, you could find NSXs. Talk about a dream car that will always be excellent. I'm looking at these as aspirational $30,000 cars. But then back to my point about all these, you know, luxury brands, the F-Type. There's going to be a $30,000 F-Type coupe.
Yeah, yeah. Or the V8 Vantage, Aston Martins. Those are they might come down that low. I don't know if they'll quite get to 30, but they're in the 40s now.
I think the badge alone keeps them high.
Yeah.
Just artificially, I would say, just like a Ferrari, you'd never really see, I don't know, some newer, more popular models come down into that territory. They wouldn't drop below, I don't know, 70, 80, something like that.
Wouldn't think anyway.
You know, just because of the name alone, but yeah, there's so many out there. And so I come back to an optimistic place, to be honest, especially with Hyundai coming out with their N version of everything. And all of us are paying attention. We're waiting for the N version of the Elantra GT. And people have asked about that.
Or, you know, the new Supra coming up. That'll drop below 30 at some point.
Absolutely. It was, let's see, it was Greg F. on Facebook. Thank you for the question. Yeah, we're looking at those. We're keeping track of everything that is coming our way, because 2019 is coming, season 5 is coming, even though we're not quite back on TV and Amazon with season 4. But
it's amazing how far ahead we have to think now, isn't it?
Well, we do, because the cars that are coming, and we think of the matchups and the pairings, and as specs get released by car companies, then we've got to put these together, because, you know, we're coming from a shopping perspective.
Yeah.
Not a, you've got $40,000 extra money.
Well, it was fun being at the auto show this year. Like, the last few years, we've kind of gotten everything just to get in everything, so we had stuff to talk about on the podcast and could relate to them, and
oh, yeah,
even if we hadn't driven them. But this time, we were like, okay, what would that car go well with for an episode? What would those cars go with? The whole
kind
time
of walking
we're,
around
we're shopping for TV show.
Yeah, we were looking at all these pairings.
But it was fun, too. It was really getting our creative juices flowing. And,
Yeah, I'm really all about the Mazda 3. I'm really excited about that car. I'm just excited about a lot of car manufacturers recognizing and starting to recognize the proliferation of little cars like that. And it's not a lot. It's not a lot. Believe me, there's tons of the SUVs everywhere. But I think there will still be the really focused cars that come out from manufacturers that have a background in doing this. BMW, Porsche, Mazda, Hyundai. At least those four that are used to it, I would say.
Corvette,
sure. I mean, I'd like that car to be smaller personally, but it's...
Well, yeah, but I just mean they're not... The Z06 is heavy, but the base cars aren't that heavy.
Yeah, I suppose. I guess just in overall proportions, they just seem like a gigantic car to me.
Yeah, true.
Even though, they're really not, especially in comparison to 911s.
Yeah, they got a big footprint, I guess. Yeah, that's true.
No, I'm coming back to an optimistic place where... Like I said, the big cars that we think are, wow, 50, 60 now, can't get into those, but they're coming down.
What about the Alfa 4C?
I was wondering about that, too.
I mean, I've driven them. You guys have driven them. They're great on the road. They're really great on the road. But you drive them on a track, they're not really. But on a back road, they're not too bad.
Yeah, ask me about my experience.
Yeah, we've all heard that rant.
On Spa with a 4C. Not a fan. But yes, on the road, on the
just a general driver's car, I think that it's a great option.
Yeah, I definitely see that.
And I think you look at Alfa traditionally, they're going to drop too. They've already dropped quite a bit.
Yeah, I see it continuing in a smaller capacity. It may not be as large and fun as we're all used to, as we would prefer. But again, I think electric cars being democratized as far as price, and then hopefully companies figuring out that they need to provide a fun option, whatever that is, in any car company. They need to provide something fun, and I think there's a business case to be made for it, personally.
Yeah.
I speak for me. I realize that.
Well, that's why the Z4 still exists. That's why the Miata still exists. Yep. That's why the 86 still exists for now anyways.
I feel like Toyota's kind of coming back around. They've spent a lot of time fixing the problem of getting Camrys into the hands of anybody. Of everybody, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I had one.
And making all these cars that anybody could own.
Uh-huh.
But then the specialized cars, the super nameplate has been dormant for 20 years? More?
Yeah, actually, that's kind of
how crazy
sad.
Is that? And they're bringing it back. So that gives me hope, honestly.
Yeah.
And they've got the racing history and experience to go do that. And I think, all right, I wonder if the Supra wakes something up. I wonder if it wakes something up in Nissan.
I hope so.
370Z and GTR need to be slapped.
Yeah, as a kind of off topic here, but the Pirelli World Challenge recently changed its name. It's now the Blancpain World Challenge GT something or the rather.
I could switch to watches, but
but I recently got asked, like, you know, some of these smaller classes with touring cars, which is where the 350Z or 370Zs were racing.
Yeah, right.
They're a 10-year-old chassis.
Are they competitive actually out there?
The local team that runs two of them, he won the championship, I think.
But it's because it's a race car and he's just throwing parts at it. It's
not and he's going against the M235 IRs and stuff like that, which are also really good. But I keep wondering, you know, it's a 10-year-old car. When are they going to update this thing?
I am ready for that. I feel like.
I mean, how long can they keep riding that wave in racing? And once that happens, then it's like, well, hello.
Well, they brought out a special edition at SEMA, and it was just a little bit of Alcantara and some
stripped out seats.
Yeah, and it was just some quilted stuff and
borderline race car.
Yawned, walked past it. But should Nissan bring something when a Toyota Supra drops, they'd be the talk of everybody. I mean, yeah. Can you imagine?
Yeah, they need to bring
keep something
what,
in reserve.
A 380Z, I don't know.
They have the Datsun nameplate in reserve that they could bring something back, and they've teased us with show cars at least for the last few years.
Well, that's because Datsun still exists in Asia.
Well, it does, but I guess as an enthusiast brand, they could bring that back and bring something and drop a 2 Series competitor.
What was it, the IDX, the 510 and Roman numeral? Where's that car? What happened to that thing?
I agree. I completely agree.
It was cool looking.
All right, so Nissan, if you're listening, we have high hopes for you. We're ready. We know you're going through some trouble right now with the CEO and all that stuff, with Carlos Ghosn is gone.
they have some issues right now, that's for sure.
They do, but I'm remaining optimistic at this point. It's not like there's no enthusiast cars for sale, right?
Yeah.
I'm coming back to that.
They had the GTR front and center in their booth this year again.
That's because that's the looks. Everything else, as you wander farther back into the booth, things don't get better than the GTR. They start with the good stuff, and it doesn't get better the farther back you walk. So, yes, we need a 370. We need something new. I want them to bring some cool Datsun back.
Yeah.
That would be cool. That would be hot.
Yeah.
A 2 Series competitor, a little bit smaller. I could see it. All right. Well, guys, thank you for your Topic Tuesday questions. If you've got your own Topic Tuesday, please write to us, Everyday Driver TV, and you can write your car debates to us there as well. We are really appreciative of all the support you guys have given us as we are recovering from the loss of the gear. We keep all talking about the data we lost, which is gutting, but we are moving past, and thank you for the support. It's been really hugely encouraging, and I just want to land on that again. And so, car debates, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com. You can write to us there. But for right now, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back.
Have you checked out the Big Podcast with Shaq here at Podcast One? Yeah, we talk basketball, but we're a lot more than just sports.
I met this fabulous lady. She's had to be in her 70s, knew everything about me, knew everything about sports. And the last thing she says, I love your podcast. And
wow.
I'm like,
oh,
but I hate that John Kincaid.
That's terrible. Listen free to the Big Podcast with Shaq exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. Guess what? You can watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies all on demand completely free. Pluto TV never asks for a credit card, and you don't even need to sign up to watch for free. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV. You can download Pluto TV for free on all your favorite devices today, including your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStation, and anywhere else you stream. Every car has its own fair share of stories, some more than others. You know, that ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, or the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer long.
Well, now with TrueCar, you can find out exactly what your car is worth when it's time to sell it or trade it in. You just go to TrueCar and you enter your license plate number and you watch how your car's details pop up.
Then you've got to answer a few questions, like, does it have navigation and moonroof? Watch as it bumps up your value as you change the options. Do you have high mileage? Well, you already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. When you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent to you in minutes, which you can then take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in.
So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer is not available in all areas.
We've got probably one of the longest questions, I guess, we've ever had to tackle from Kevin T. in Pennsylvania. Kevin, thank you for writing in. The question is long, but it can be condensed in a little bit.
Well, I think the question is very short. It's
the color of it. Around it.
Yeah.
Right. So the question and the headline is, what car should I sell and what should I keep? But you need to know the backstory, obviously, here, because Kevin and his father are car guys to the core. Kevin's 27, his father's 72. They're longtime car guys, but he fell out of the hobby while he was at school on Long Island. And he said where driving was more about traffic and errands and budgets than freedom and fun, but he has really rediscovered everything he loves about driving. And as it turns out, his father being a car guy his whole life, he's had more classic American muscle cars than he can list, including most of this rather long collection. I counted. It's 22 cars.
I was just going to say, I just counted myself. 22 cars.
22 cars in the collection, and Kevin is writing to say, what should I keep? What should I sell?
And he sent pictures, too. It's not like we worry sometimes with these emails where someone sends a big old shopping list, and it's like, is this real, or is this just someone kind of trying to brag?
We know it's real. I mean,
this one's
genuine, yeah. For sure, but it was pretty crazy to see some of these photos. So, Kevin, thank you for sending those.
Very cool, very cool.
The list is eclectic, but you've got to know what Kevin drives and his background here, because he's into quirky cars. I would say eclectic cars. And his dad's got this collection, and he's coming to it thinking, all right, either some of these cars need to be wrenched on and fixed up, or they need to be sold, or I need to start driving them. But he drives an 03 Mercedes-Benz C240 4MATIC wagon, so the all-wheel drive wagon.
Yeah.
This is his daily. He purchased it 3 or 4 months ago, 50,000 miles, runs great. This is the daily. So theoretically, he could just keep driving this. It's the do-it-all car. But he's got so many varied cars, which we're going to go through the entire list and kind of, I think, weigh in. Where did you take things when looking at this list? Did you decide what cars you wanted to keep, and did you make any recommendations for things that he should buy or add to the collection?
Yeah, he gave us kind of a general idea of, you know, if we sell cars, he gave us general values of them. Mm-hmm. Of what he's guessing based on research he's done. He said, if you sell these cars, add up the values of those, and then we could potentially pick a couple other things to add to it that we think they're missing.
Yeah, right.
So I kind of went that route, and I'll be honest. Some of these cars are, they kind of left me scratching my head a little bit.
In what sense?
Like, some of them are like, that's an interesting...
Like, why would you own that car?
What do you have that for?
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with it. It's just a very... that one's random in this
list.
Why
on earth do you own this car? Kevin is, again, liking the quirky and different unique cars. And so it's either a suggestion on, if we sell it, should we add things back in? And if so, does it fit the collection? But the collection is so varied, I'd say.
It's fairly diverse, but it's also mostly American.
Yeah, okay. I can see that. I can see that. You're right. There's some
German flavors in there as
well. There's like two or three Audis in here too that I'm confused about. But all right, so we've got to jump into the list so you can at least hear what we're dealing with. 22 cars.
He gave us pros and cons to each one of these, like why he thinks this would be one to keep and why he's not so interested in it at the same time.
I also actually came up with my own quirky list of cars, I'll say, the quirkiest cars I could think of. And it actually kind of got pretty long, which I'm surprised about. But we'll start off with the list here. And starting out with, let's see, a BMW, a 2000 E46 323, 68,000 miles, manual, in silver. Pretty cool coupe.
Yeah.
I like this car. Just the photo alone made me think, don't get rid of this car. Keep it.
That's kind of where I was. It seems like he says he really likes driving it. It's not an M3. But it's still a BMW. It's a manual transmission.
Kevin, you said the value was $4,000, and I went searching, and I couldn't find very many of the 323s, but $4,000, that's all it's worth?
That's probably not far off.
I would say it's almost worth keeping that because it's so low, and it's such low mileage. At that mileage, I don't know that it's going to ding you a whole lot on maintenance. I'd say just drive it. Enjoy it. It's a great car. The chassis is excellent.
Yeah, that seems like it would be a great daily car, really.
So you're thinking he should keep this one as well?
I think keep that one.
All right, so then we're on to an Audi A4 Quattro Cabriolet, 2006. Needs nothing. It's an automatic blue, 60,000 miles. $7,000 value? I'm actually going with a sell rating on this.
I mean, he says straight up that he thinks it's boring, it's outdated, and The interior just is not all that nice anymore, and it's starting to have the electrical issues that Audis are so synonymous with.
Yeah, although it's crazy because that was like Audis were back with interiors. Everybody's looking at their interiors right about the mid-2000s as the pinnacle of, you know, interior design. How cool is this? And here it is like, the interior's kind of dated now.
Yeah. I mean, it's a 15-year-old car now.
That's crazy to think about. 12, well, not quite.
Not quite. It's close.
Wow.
So yeah, I say get rid of that one myself. So that adds us $7,000-ish.
Right. Are you keeping track? Are you adding things up?
I had my number at the bottom of my page.
Oh, you did?
I do, yeah.
Okay, all right.
The next one is a 2008 Chevy Avalanche LTZ. This one was one of the head-scratchers for me.
I like that you said it's the chrome Brodozer spec. Is that a box you could check at the dealership?
It's got the bed tonneau cover. He says it's not particularly his style, but he thinks it would be cool to bum around on in a big chrome truck for a while, and it's pretty luxurious.
I'm actually going with sell on this one.
Same.
Avalanche, I know people like them. There's other better trucks, we'll say.
Yeah.
I'm not liking it enough, despite the, as nice it as is, I'm just thinking you could probably use the money to put towards something else that you'd really drive and enjoy. I think this would sit.
And I mean, how often are you, lower on your list that you might need to borrow a truck every now and again, but how often are you really borrowing a truck?
And there's other trucks on the list.
Yeah.
All right. So you're selling that one too. That takes us to a C5 Corvette, 2002 Corvette with 5,000 miles.
Yeah.
Manual transmission. It's a convertible, but it's red, worth about $20,000, but it's got 5,000 miles on it. This is a brand new car.
Pretty much.
I'm not seeing a reason to sell it.
I say keep it and enjoy that thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the Z06 flavor, but who cares?
No, who cares?
It's a convertible and it's manual.
What are those, 350 horsepower? Something like that?
Something like that.
Somewhere in there.
But it's manual. We keep talking about save the manuals, right?
Yeah.
Keep this car, Kevin. This is kind of cool. I'm all about this. And, you know, you said you're not captivated by the C5 styling, but I think it's going to be worth it to keep it.
I've always liked the C5 styling. I thought it was pretty clean. They're kind of bubbly now, but I've always thought they were pretty decent looking cars. Yeah.
And, you know, it's a big GT car, especially in convertible form, and the top's down. It looks huge and long to my eye, but that's all right. I'm all about this car. There's actually more Corvettes that we're getting to, but that does bring us to a TR7 from 1977.
Yeah. It's another one of those oddball cars. Interestingly, though, we showed up to a local Cars and Coffee here in the summertime, and there was a TR7 that showed up, a student driver driving it. Dad let his daughter drive it to Cars and Coffee.
Which is actually
pretty cool. It had student driver stickers all over it. It was really cool.
Yeah. This only has 38,000 miles. It's a manual in orange, and it's a coupe, which is actually kind of rare. I think it's kind of rare. I thought most of them were actually convertibles. But
I think I've always thought they were kind of the target top thing, like a 914,
a
British 914 kind of thing.
But I think it's going to cost you. And Kevin is telling us that he wants to actually wrench on some things. He wants to spend some time fixing things up. And I think we should kind of offer some guidance where he should put some time and money into if there's some things to be fixed up here. But I'm saying there's got to be a TR7 owners forum that will love this car and somebody would love to have it, but I don't think this is the car to pour your blood, sweat, and tears into.
No, I'm kind of with you, though. I'm kind of in the middle here. I think sell it, but I also think maybe you should play around with it for a little bit and make up your mind about it, because he says he likes quirky cars.
He does.
And these are quirky little things.
I do have a really quirky list at the end. I've got to read you. All right, so we're on to a 94 Ford SVT Cobra, and I'm actually wondering where you're going to land on this car.
Well, at first I was kind of like, it's an early Cobra, but it's got 4,600 miles on it, and he doesn't mention it on the list, but in the pictures it is an Indy car, or an Indy 500 pace car.
Yeah, from 94.
And I think that's one to keep myself.
Do you think those special editions were special enough? Or are they just graphics on the door? And
I think this one, I mean, it's worth more than what a normal Cobra would be. It's not worth a lot of money right now, but I think that might be one that you can hang on to for 10, 20 more years, and
I suppose it might be worth something. I just found it odd because it's usually a Corvette that does the pace car thing for Indy 500. And here's this Mustang convertible, and
Mustang did them a few times.
Really?
Yeah, they did a few of them.
I guess so. It's the high-performance Cobra, but I don't know. I was leaning towards sell on this one because you could probably get some bucks for it. Only 4,600 miles, and it's a manual.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to love this car. Yeah. which leaves you room. I mean, if you're keeping the Corvette convertible, I'd say sell this one.
But I think it's the lowest of low. I don't know if it's going to drop any more than it already has.
Think so? You think
that's kind of what I think, just because of what it is.
Ride the bottom of the trough for a while, and then maybe they'll go up.
Yeah, so I mean, you look at the Terminator Cobras, the 2003, 2004 Cobras.
Oh, yeah, right.
Those are $30,000 still.
Are they really?
Those are holding on to their values.
That's crazy.
I mean, this isn't a Terminator, but it's no. still it's a Cobra. It's a pace car. It's going to be something someday.
Yeah,
it probably
so.
Won't be like the Shelby GT500s of the 60s kind of values, but it who knows?
Yeah, maybe so.
Maybe I'm being too optimistic.
Well, being the Mustang guy of anybody, I wanted to see what you think, but that's interesting. All right, so now we're on to other things, which is kind of weird. A 1982 MGB, white roadster, 14,000 miles, value Kevin estimates at $7,000. I'm personally going to say sell this car. I'm not seeing a reason to keep a small British roadster that... they're small, but...
I'm of two minds here. This is the original Miata. That's kind of what the Miata is based upon.
I
is
suppose,
one of these.
But, you know, but leaf springs.
Every time I see someone driving, it's always the same guy driving. It's this gray-haired guy in a tweed jacket and a little hat
tweed.
On.
There's tweed going
gloves.
On everywhere, yes.
So, I mean...
If you own an MGB, you've got to have tweed in your closet.
You have to.
Of some form. A cap, yeah. so, a jacket with the leather elbow patches.
It's a costume car.
Yikes. That's the reason I think you should sell it. But, you know, if you're into that kind of thing, great. I think you should get rid of it. Get something different.
Yeah.
All right.
So next he has a 92 GMC Sonoma with a 5-speed manual, and it's only got 44,000 miles on it.
This is also probably pretty new.
Mounted toolboxes. It's not worth a whole heck of a lot, but he says he's always had a weird desire for one of these. So just because I don't get it myself, but you've always wanted one, so here's your shot right here.
Here it is.
I mean,
you have one? I guess I was not going to hang on to this one. I'd eject this car too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think the money, even though it's a little bit, it could go to something you drive. Because of any collection, you want to get it to where you're driving everything, right?
But here's the thing. It's not worth hardly anything. So
it
might pay
for
gas for a year.
And insurance on it, and it's taking up space.
Yeah, true.
I don't know. All right, I could go both ways on that. We've got a 1986 Nissan 300ZX, 35,000 miles, manual in black. Please keep this car.
I disagree. It's a Z31. It's not the nicer version.
No, it's not, but it's got the long nose and all the crazy, like, the 80s electronics in it, the 80s tech.
I guess there is a lot of quirkiness there.
It's like a robot kind of look to it on the inside.
But he says he's not really that into it, and it doesn't do anything for him. So because of that reason, I think just get rid of it. It's not something worth hanging on to.
He said he hasn't really driven it, so please drive it and get back to me.
Yeah, drive it first before you get rid of it, but... I'm just not feeling that one either.
I think they're cool.
I've always thought they're goofy looking, but you know, that's just me.
All right. What else?
The next one is a 91 500 SL Roadster, 38,000 miles, automatic, worth about $13,000, white over red interior. Says his wife can drive it. It'd be a great daily driver for her.
I suppose keep it. I mean, it's a bulletproof Mercedes, right? 38,000 miles. Just drive it.
Yeah. But when something does go wrong in that car, it could pull out your checkbook.
True. I guess so.
I'm in a gray area on this one. I think I could see either way.
The car that I'm not on the gray area is the next one, which is a 1989 Chrysler TC by Maserati. Remember this car?
Uh-huh.
I saw one by the side of the road, and I nearly spit out my drink. I was, oh, yeah. I remember those cars. I remember hating them then, too.
And this one is also purple with a saddle interior.
Purple. Let me read
purple.
That again. Purple over saddle.
Not good.
No. Just no. There's another purple car
he even
in here
says,
too, by the way.
In his own description, he says this thing is truly terabad.
I think we know what's happening with that. I was going to, you know, do the kill, crush, or launch in outer space thing with this car. But yeah, I think it's time for that to go.
Yeah.
The two that I think you should keep are the next two, a 71 Lincoln Continental Mark III.
Really?
Ah, yeah. Huge boat.
Oh, that is a gigantic boat.
And most definitely a 58 Cadillac Fleetwood.
Now, the Fleetwood's cool. I'm all for keeping the Fleetwood.
Yeah.
Those are pretty cars.
But the 71 Continental, that's just huge. It's just... Ah, it's so alt.
Why?
It matches his quirky thing. I think so.
Well,
yeah.
If you say so.
It's comfy. All right, we've got two more Corvettes here, a C4 and a C3. So 1984 C4 Corvette, that was actually the first year of the C4 generation. There were no 1983s. Oh, keep this car. Oh.
Yeah, I'm with you. The C4 honestly was a huge surprise for me.
Yeah, and it's got that digital dash thing going on, and the new style.
Yeah. I like the later ones better than the newer ones.
I do too, but
you got the LT1 in them instead. But shoot. You know, they're still it's an impressive car.
24,000 miles. Oh, drive this
and
car.
The next one is the opposite direction. It's a 79 C3 Corvette, which is kind of the bottom of the bottom for Corvettes.
Well, kind of, yeah.
But 15,000 miles.
But the body style is sweet looking.
The pictures looked great. It was yellow.
Yeah,
he does say that was always his favorite style of Corvette, but I say sell it.
Oh, you do?
I say sell this one.
Really? I was thinking, hang on to this thing, because then you'd have a C3, C4, and C5. You could actually curate the collection to go back towards Corvettes.
Well, I'll give you a little hint. I'm replacing it with a different C3.
Okay. All right.
I'd use some of the money and get a 68 or a 69 C3.
Fair enough. I could see that. Yeah, a lot more power in those cars.
You've got power. You've got some slightly better lines, I think, with the chrome bumpers and the lights. And I think they're nicer cars.
I could see that if it got replaced. Sure. There's a truck on here, 96 Ford F250, 48,000 miles. It sounds like, Kevin, it needs some work. But on the other hand, it's only got 48,000 miles on a 22-year-old truck. That could be useful.
Yeah.
It's paid for. It's worth nearly nothing.
And he doesn't say if it's a diesel or if not, but if it's a diesel, and that thing will tow like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, it will anyway. It's huge.
Yeah.
But then the car that I love that's on your list here is the next one. It's a 73 De Tomaso Pantera.
I want one so bad.
This is the car that I think chances an agreement that you should put your time and energy into this car.
Yes.
Not the MGB, not the Triumph TR7. Forget those.
One of his worries he talks about is yes, it's an Italian car. However, it's an Italian car with Ford parts.
Exactly.
You can get those parts at O'Reilly or AutoZone.
Yes. Yeah, this is why you need to work on this car. Drive it, please, when you get it to a drivable shape. It doesn't have to be perfect. But you had a concern that if you do a great job and it's going to be, you know, pretty awesome when you're done, that you wouldn't drive it. You have permission. You have our permission to go drive it and enjoy it.
Yes. Please do.
Oh, my gosh. Any of us see a Pantera actually moving and not on a Concours show floor? We're freaked out about how good this thing looks moving.
Oh, yeah.
It's part of the experience of that Pantera. It's part of what it needs to do to make it look even better. It's got to move.
We followed one on the way to Pebble Beach when we landed.
Yes, we did.
That was just so cool.
We kept just commenting. We were astounded. We could see the driver down through the window and the visceral experience of this car.
And here's the thing. Yeah. Panteras, while they're cool, and they're fairly valuable, they're never going to be like super, super extremely valuable like a Ferrari or something like that.
Which is the reason to drive
it. Which is why you can drive them.
Yep.
Yep.
I'm with you. Yep. All right. There's a 1952 Dodge Street Rod truck, and then a little bit lower on your list, a 34 Dodge Brothers Street Rod, red over red velvet, crate engine, velvet limousine interior. I think both of these would be your opportunity to be introduced to the world of auctions.
You think so?
I do. I'm not really about these two. The first one, the 52 Dodge Street Rod truck, has a crate engine and apparently a gorgeous paint job. Candy apple red over beige. Not bad. And you did say that you helped a lot with the restoration, so there's a sentimental value here, but that happens with a lot of cars on the auction block. And you see hot rods go across the block, and there's guys who poured their heart into these cars.
Yeah.
I think it's part of the experience, to be honest. And you've got two candidates here that would sell at auction, I think.
Yeah, they would. I think it's really cool, though. I'm the old car guy, but I think this is really cool. And
but you'd drive it even in like the coldest day.
I did that with my Mustang.
I know you would. You would drive these cars.
But I had a neighbor that used to have. Well, he still has it. He's got like a 56 or something Chevy pickup truck. It's got a 350 in it, and it was cool. He'd cruise around in it. And then I'm actually working on this project where a client of mine is building this 1955 F100, and he's putting a 6-liter power stroke into the thing.
Holy cow.
It was originally out of his drag truck, and it was making something like 1,800 pound-feet of torque, and they're putting it in this 55 pickup, which is really cool.
That is cool. Is that like when your brakes fail and you're trying to stop at the red light?
Maybe it's because I'm working on this project right now that I'm kind of like drawn to classic trucks.
That's why. All right. So you're thinking keep both of those?
The truck anyway. The street rod, I had to actually Google that one, and it was a pretty cool looking car.
It's a cool looking car.
Pretty cool looking car.
I think the auction you'd get. You could go sell these and then go shopping while you're at auction for some more quirkiness. I think this could be your introduction to the cool, fun world of auctions. I mean, granted, if you have money and time and... Yeah, but still, I think this could be interesting. Two more cars on the list. That was 20 cars, if you can believe it. 72 yeah. Pontiac Le Mans, 500 horsepower crate motor, red over brown.
Yes, please.
Keep that car.
Yes, please.
I think that's a cool car. And then... Well, there's actually...
There's two more. There's two more on the list. one of them's a 2004 Audi A6 Quattro 2.7 Turbo. 125,000 miles. Constantly in the shop and keep leaving him stranded. Why do you still have it?
I'm not sure. I say sell that one too. Or maybe you could give it away.
Yeah.
You know, take the, you know, write off on your taxes next year.
Cash for clunkers?
Anything.
Or something.
You're right. There is a last one on here, which I had to laugh.
Yeah, I laughed at it pretty good, too. It's a 2005 Volkswagen Phaeton.
Oh, the V8. All-wheel drive, four-motion, purple over black, 12,000 miles. This car is perfect and new, except it doesn't run.
Yeah.
And apparently, many shops have not been able to get it running. It's perfectly aesthetically... pleasing. Everything is great. It's just the mechanical electrical parts on this car. 12,000 miles and it doesn't run. It's because it's sat, pretty much.
You know that whole thing Todd likes saying? Ask about cheap Phaetons? I think he's got some stories for you.
I think he does. I'd say, Kevin, give this the giveaway challenge. If you can get this car running, it is yours, baby.
Yeah.
You get to drive it away. It's a practically brand new car. The leather's awesome. I'm sure everything is beautiful about this car. Sounds rare, purple over black. I'm not sure who would have ordered that color combination, but okay. I think you should, get rid of this car. This is going to be the money pit of all money pits.
Uh-huh.
And you've got your Pantera project. Remember, you've got to focus on that. And we've sold a fair amount of cars where you could get something. I'm thinking like, a fun convertible, maybe add a Boxster in there.
Yeah.
I was thinking for the sake of quirkiness, maybe something Jaguar. There's no... Well, real British in here. So something Jaguar, like a Series 1 XJ6 from late 60s through the 70s.
I like those.
Or an original 60s Mini Cooper. That could be fun.
Yeah.
Kind of a fun, quirky car. K cars are also got to be on your list, like a Suzuki Cappuccino. That is totally different. Very interesting. They run, by the way.
Yeah, and they're pretty cheap.
And what about a Mazda RX-7? Have an RX-7. Any generation.
Any gen, yeah.
I say
that's
go
good,
get one of those.
That's a good choice right there,
rotary
actually.
Engine.
I like that.
I think it fits with your quirky proclivities and flavor, and I think it would be great. I think you'd really enjoy driving it. Even the first gen, I think it'd be great.
Yeah.
RX-7.
So I had I replaced the C3 with a 69, as I mentioned already, but I also thought if you wanted to, you could replace that 84 and get yourself a C4 ZR1.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't say anything more about those cars.
Yeah, so I'll just leave that there. But I also had, since I had my argument about the 300ZX, why not get a 240Z?
Okay.
sell it and get a 240Z.
But he's got that 300. I always dug those cars. They're just kind of different. They've got just, the T-tops.
They're weird.
They're cool.
Ugly. Ugh.
All right, so I'm going to land on my quirky list here. This is something I was thinking about. I'm not saying buy these cars, but it just struck me as the most quirky you can get. I'm challenging. I'm throwing down here. It's a list. It's a bit of a list, so I'll go fast. 78 Saab 99 Turbo.
Yeah.
1968 okay. Opel GT with the headlights.
Those are pretty cool. Those
flip
pretty
over.
Cool. Yeah.
1974 Jetta G21. Very interesting. Yeah. 71 Lotus Europa.
Yeah, those are pretty wacky.
Apparently, you can win the lowrider
contest
with a Europa.
Yeah, maybe I've shared the story before, but we went to one of those Scrape Fest shows. we went because
why were you in a Scrape Fest show? By the way,
yeah, exactly.
Reveal that
it's not my scene. That's for sure. I don't vape enough. But we had this guy locally who did ceramic paint protection or ceramic coatings on your paint. He said he wanted a bright, flashy car for his vendor booth and said, hey, you've got a bright orange Boxster. I'll ceramic coat it for you if you let me put it in my booth. So we said yes.
You say yes to that kind of thing,
yeah.
And then you find yourself at a Scrape
and
Fest.
And then we were at Scrape Fest. Mm-hmm. Well, we had all these guys, you know, they have the cars with the crazy rear camber and the airbags and all the things, and they're just, you know, scraping on the tiny little pebbles in the
scrape
pavement.
Heads? Scrape. All right, yeah.
Yeah. And at the end of the show, the highlight, I guess, is they do a car limbo.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got them going underneath the bar, and they lower it every so often. And as the show goes on, you have more and more people on top of these cars to compress the suspension more to get it under the bar. But
okay.
There was a stock Lotus Europa that was at this show. It won. They are tiny.
They are tiny. All right. Last three cars
like
on my list.
Lotus Elite.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Remember that Brazilian Puma, a 1980 Puma GTE, a 72 Porsche 914, and a Volkswagen Thing.
There you go.
That's
yeah.
my list
that's
of quirk.
That's pretty good. I didn't have so much quirky cars. I've already listed a few, but I ended up with, excluding my gray area cars, I ended up with roughly $85,000 you can play with.
That's pretty good, actually.
And so I kind of went with a more modern, fun car. I had a couple different ones, and I kind of kept with the American trend here. So you could get a GT350R for this money.
Yes, you
could. And if you wanted something that could haul a family around in, have you heard of the Charger Hellcat?
Yes.
I mean, why not?
Why not?
I mean, it fits some of these nutty muscle cars you've got here and the
it
old
does.
Hot rods. And
it
it's modern. It'll have all your modern day amenities and features. And
I can see that.
There you go.
All right. Slice up your $85,000. That's a pretty good chunk after selling some of these cars. But yeah,
I was kind of surprised how much it added up.
It's amazing. It does add up. All right. Well, Kevin, you've got some homework to do there. Let us know what cars go when you get a chance. And thanks for writing in. Like I said before, if you've got your own debate, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com. We've got a ton of questions. Thank you guys for writing in questions. We are jumping right to those. And I thought since we've got Chance here with a 996 on Instagram, Alvaro F. Matos.
That's the first one I've got open too.
Oh, good. He's asking, should I spend the money replacing the IMS bearing on his 996 if it's gone 157,000 miles without issues?
I'm going to say no. And here's
really?
Why. Unless the car, I would think if it was going to have issues, it was going to happen already. All the cars that have these issues are low miles,
mm-hmm.
and they're not really driven. That said, they do still wear out. So what our mechanic said to do is every time you do an oil change, just keep your eye on the oil. And as long as there's no metal flakes in it, you're fine. You don't have anything to worry about.
I mean, what about when you do a clutch replacement?
But
you're already in there, right?
If you wanted to, yeah. If you've got the means to do it when you're doing the clutch, by all means, do it. If it gives you peace of mind, you'll be done. It'll actually add some value back to your car because there's a lot of people that think you have to have that done.
I suppose.
And that's my piece of advice.
Well, there's also a question that relates to a car you've owned from Brad A. on Facebook, who asks if there's any reason from a reliability standpoint to stay away from the early model years of the GT86 platform. I mean, besides from that, what was it, that whistling fuel injector?
The crickets.
But that's not a reliability thing. That's just
an
annoying sound thing.
That was just a sound.
It still worked fine, right?
Yeah, and Toyota actually, I don't know how many times they redesigned it, but they redesigned that stupid thing like four times, and it still made the sound. Even the brand new ones make that sound. It's something to do with the way it's insulated, I guess. It works just fine. It's just
even
an
the early
obnoxious,
ones worked fine, right?
Yeah, it's just an obnoxious noise. You can get it replaced, and it'll go away for a couple thousand miles, but it'll come right back. That's just what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And my car was one of the early cars. Mine was number 1083 off the line. It was built in June 2012.
So you were
It was an early car.
But you didn't have any problems, right?
The only problem it ever had was it had dual climate control, and the baffle underneath the dash got stuck, so I had to have it replaced. That was the only issue I ever had with that car.
That has nothing to do with powertrain or anything.
Nope. And I did replace a clutch, but that's a consumable, technically.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, there's a question over here on Facebook from Adam R. asking our thoughts on a $5,000 E36 or E46 convertible, not an M3, for next summer weekend family drives with two small kids. Is this worth it, or is it full of headaches? For $5,000, I say buy it. I think that'd be a boatload of fun. I think your kids would remember it for a long time. Honestly, we've heard even the M3 E36 is a pretty not only inexpensive car to buy, but inexpensive to work on. I mean, you're going to be doing a few things yourself, but I say go for it. And this is not a high-strung M3, so why not? You could probably shop pretty smart and get one that's pretty decent.
Yeah, the E36 is even the M3s are stupid cheap. And from what I hear, they're easy to work on yourself. One of my neighbors, though, he had, I think it was like a 2003 E46 330 convertible. It was silver. It was a manual, and he loved it. They went everywhere in that thing. Top up, top down, winter driving. That was one of their year-round cars.
Cool. All right, well, what other questions did you find on here?
Tyler Champion on Instagram asked, what do you do when you get into a car that you can't heel toe? His A4 gas pedal is so low he can't even learn. That's a good question. I've got really long feet, so I don't know if I've ever really experienced that issue. But I will say, heel towing is so much easier when you're driving the car in anger than it is if you're just rolling up to stop signs. So much easier.
Tyler, this is going to sound strange, but change your driving position. It doesn't solve everything, but whenever I've gotten into a car with an instructor, and it's a manual transmission, and we're coming into either a driving day or it's, you know, a press day, whatever that is, the instructors have always changed my own driving position to be a little bit closer than I'm normally at. I'm a little bit more uncomfortable, much like race car drivers sit. They're a little too close and they're just over the wheel.
Yeah. I sat in that GT2 RS Club Sport at the auto show. I don't know if I was supposed to, but I did it anyways.
Yes, I know you did.
And with the seat all the way back, I had plenty of leg room, but that steering wheel is right in your chest.
Yes, it is. Now, you might think that it's your feet or where your feet go, but actually, it changes your position on the pedals just slightly. Try that out. It may not, but I'm just saying, play with your driving position a little bit. We've heard various things, and you guys have written in, you know, where you just drape a wrist over the steering wheel, and that's about where you want to be.
Yeah.
We've heard that from a lot of instructors as well. But get a little bit closer than you normally would, as if you're on a track day, because when are you really going to be doing a lot of heel and towing? At a track, theoretically. Yeah. I'm saying change your driving position, look into that, but sometimes the architecture of the pedals just isn't set up for it. It just isn't.
Also, how are you trying to heel and toe? I've heard a lot of people trying to do it the opposite way that most people do, where they actually put their heel on the brake pedal and try and flip with their toes.
Oh, yeah.
The way I do it, and I mean, you can do it that way. There are people that do it
that way.
People
do, sure.
But most people use the ball of your foot on the brake, and you rotate your foot over and use your heel of your toe to blip the throttle.
Your pinky toe, you're saying?
No, your heel over to the gas pedal.
Oh, the heel on the toe.
Yeah.
On the gas pedal instead.
Yeah, so your toes are on your brake pedal and your heel to the gas pedal.
Yes, right. That's how I've learned to do it, actually.
Yeah.
And that actually might help. So if your foot is a little bit higher by virtue of your changed seating position, so it's putting that ball of your foot right on the brake pedal. And actually, you're not using your full heel. You're kind of using the side of your shoe, actually.
Yeah.
It's really not fully your heel where you're, you know, duck-toed, you know, doing the duck walk kind of thing, but it's actually kind of the side of your foot, and that actually your driving position might change that.
In some cars, you don't have enough room to even do it that way.
Yeah, true. Exactly. Let's see. There was a link from Wyatt M. about the Porsche Cayman. The
rally car.
The rally car, saying they just need 100 customers. I would love to be a customer. They'll build it if they can just justify 100 customers.
Well, here's the thing. This isn't the first time they've built Cayman rally cars. And I know it's been mentioned before about asking about Elise rally cars, too. There was actually a series in Europe that raced Lotus Exige rally cars and Porsche rally cars on, I think it's Rally Cross, where it's half dirt, half pavement, and you're actually racing with other cars on the track with you at the same time, doing laps instead of a point-to-point kind of thing. They're really cool.
Yeah, they are. There's a comment here from Ronald H. on Facebook as well, saying on our last podcast, we talked a lot about the size of cars at the LA Auto Show, the Gladiator, the G70, the 8 Series. The 8 Series is huge, by the way. The Tour X, the 911. Is the way that we look at the size of cars and trucks skewed based on the size of cars and well, just the cars that we like driving? Sure, it is, because we're coming in with a certain perception instantly, right off the bat. Well, the larger the car, generally speaking, the weight goes up. Things change when you lengthen the wheelbase. And is it a GT car? Is it a high-speed, you know, GT car? Or is it a shorter wheelbase? Kind of fun. It's going to be more nimble, that kind of thing. So we're already looking at the architecture just by observing the car and definitely looking at the weight. But that's when cars can surprise us, when we finally do drive a car. Maybe it's the G70 or, you know, whatever that is, and we drive something like the Honda Civic Type R, and we're thoroughly surprised by a car and think, wow, this is different than the perception and the size and the packaging would suggest.
Yeah.
That's when I'm surprised. But yes, we're always looking for that, not as a benchmark, and I'm going to tease Todd a little bit since he's not here, because nothing's an Elise. Only an Elise is an Elise.
Yeah.
Nothing else handles like that car, but many cars do so many things the Elise cannot. So it's such a balance. It's such a trade-off. So we're looking at where architects of cars, I will say, the designers are going with the wheelbase, with the packaging, and what does that car suggest just by the proportions alone. But then when we're surprised, it's, you know, that's kind of a cool thing. I've been surprised a lot, which is fun.
Yeah. Matthew Brown asks us, when FCA makes a Hellcat Gladiator, what will it be called? Will it be called the Aurelius, the Spartacus, or the Legion? I think it'll be called the Zeus.
Zeus is good. I like that. Yeah, they have to do that. Somebody has to do that just as a one-off. I'm sure you wouldn't take a Hellcat Gladiator on trails at Moab, would you? I mean, the gearing alone to gear that thing down.
It's a little bit long is the problem. It's a little too long.
Well, wheelbase is, although you know people are going to have it out there. They'll have it out there for the Easter Jeep Safari in 2019.
Oh, totally.
You know that's coming. All right.
Devin Bain is asking, if I had a second Mustang to restore, what would that be and what would it look like? I think it would be similar to what I've got, only I would try and stuff the 5.2 Voodoo engine from a GT350 into it and see what I can do about getting the suspension narrowed down and kind of do a total pro touring build and just go wild with it. No one's done that motor in anything yet because Ford won't sell it as a crate motor. You can buy the block, but you can't buy the crankshaft.
Got to find a wrecked
Ford.
Car, right?
Come on, Ford. You can buy the LT6. You can buy the LT9. You can buy the Hellcat motor. Why can't we buy a Voodoo?
Maybe they're listening. Maybe somebody's listening.
One can hope.
One can hope. On Instagram, All Wheel and Driven asked our thoughts on the coming Camry and Avalon TRD flavor. Well, apparently Toyota has announced they're going to TRDize every car they make, everything in their lineup. They're going to sell cars based on that, and I think it's a good marketing decision because even the hint of sportiness is something connected to Visa and MasterCard. People will buy it.
I think they're doing they're pulling a card out of BMW's.
I think they kind of are.
They're putting M badges on everything. They're putting TRD badges on everything.
And this is going to be a car that I would love to surprise me. I just feel like the Camry. I just feel like it won't.
Well, based on how it currently drives, it's going to take a lot to really be something amazing.
It's actually the NASCAR version. Yes, it drives pretty amazing. No, I think they're going to sell cars based upon that. But as far as a dynamic car, it's going to take a lot more than just a little, some badging, maybe some suspension upgrades, well, a quicker steering ratio, a quicker throttle response. It's going to take more than those things to make me love those cars.
I mean, are they going to do what they're doing with the 86, the TRD 86, where it's got Brembo brakes and Pilot Sport tires and PS4s or whatever, but no more power?
Possibly, but that begs the question. When you have those things on those cars, the Avalon and the Camry, do people go hunting for performance with those cars? Do they go hunting for the track day or the canyon road?
No,
they do not.
No.
So, therefore, it's irrelevant if they have Brembos on the car. I was shocked the 86 had Brembos. These are huge brakes and no more power.
Yeah.
Not another.
The brakes have a lot more power. The engine doesn't.
Of power. It's like they're deliberately avoiding the elephant in the room. I guess that's why it's the elephant in the room. I mean, not anything addressing power, but they touched every other part in the car.
Yeah.
I don't get it. So they're going to sell cars. I think it's more of a marketing-based decision than a, wow, our Camry's a TRD. We can team up with our neighbor's fill-in-the-blank of hot sports car here. No, you can't. Don't even try.
It's still a Camry at the end of the day.
There was a question from Duro Rockwell on Instagram. Where do the scratches in the scallops of the door handles come from? I don't wear a ring, and I've noticed them in my current car and past cars as well. It just doesn't make any sense. I think they creep up. I've noticed them too, actually. It's fingernails, really.
Fingernails, yeah. That's what I think.
You know, you don't really pay attention, and your fingernails, just the tops of them scrape your scallops.
Yeah, just adds up over time.
Kind of does. It's not anything to worry about, really. And you can, if you really want to polish them out, you can.
Yeah. So Cam Automag is asking me how I like my new Beetle. And along with Easy Zipperer asks how I like the 996 so far compared to the Boxster.
Mm.
It's kind of a hard question. It's hard to compare the two because they're so different. The 996, mine is all-wheel drive, and it's rear engine, of course.
Yeah.
It's bigger, more power. But it doesn't really weigh any more than the Boxster does. It weighs about the same, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And but the Boxster is mid-engine, three-wheel drive. Ours has a little less power, but I think the Boxster Cayman, that chassis is just the most perfect sports car on the planet. And I'm not saying that to butter you up or anything.
You're buttering me up over here.
That's, you drive them and you're just like, this is right.
This is
the car rotates around you. You get into it and it's like. Our friend Ty, he said it after driving our car. He's like, it's like putting on a backpack.
Uh-huh.
And you're going hiking. It's just, you don't notice it's there. It's just, it does everything you want it to do around you.
Pretty much.
Whereas the 911, when you get it wrong, it will bite you in the butt.
Didn't you go sliding around in an empty parking lot with your new snow tires on?
No. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't either. Yeah, need I say more? We've got a Caymans, Generations of Caymans episode coming out for Season 4. And Season 4 starts first Saturday in January on the Motor Trend Network, but that will also push to Amazon Prime. But yes, we do talk about Caymans, all three of the generations. Lots of fun. What else? Areopolis on Instagram asked about electric cars and said Jason from Engineering Explained just posted his video on his electric car, the Nissan Leaf. Yes, we definitely saw that. Do we have any plans to add an all-electric car to our fleet? Our fleet. All of our cars. Yes. And do some reviews and long-term reviews. Well, yes, there are electric cars that we are planning on, namely Jaguar I-Pace and some other electric cars that are on our minds for Season 5, crazy enough. Unfortunately, my actual stand-up review from Pebble Beach of the Byton, both the both cars that they had there, were part of the data that disappeared off our laptops when they were stolen.
Yeah.
So that doesn't exist anymore, even though, I spent a lot of time with the Byton folks. But that just means we'll get into a Byton at some point, and we'll do a proper review, because that was really a stand-up review. You know, I was sitting in the car, and it bums me out, but we lost so much data. But we'll get in the Byton and actually, give it a proper review at some point. But yes, I don't know that we might be adding to the fleet necessarily, but we're going to be certainly getting into press cars and various electric cars for sure.
Yeah, when the Model 3 first launched. Well, not launched. When they were started taking reservations, my wife and I almost put in a reservation.
I know you did.
We were close to doing that, and then we didn't because we were in the process of buying a house.
Right.
And trying to buy a car and a house at the same time is not a good idea.
You should have like combined that with a new dog.
Lenders don't like that kind of thing.
Yeah, like get it all at once. Like add the stress level all at once.
Yeah. But I'm kind of glad we didn't for the sole reason that they are way more expensive than we thought they were going to be.
Yeah.
But I'd still take one, I think, for a commute car. I think they'd be great.
Yeah, I think they'd be good, actually. I think they'd be good. I'm starting to see them around. They're
ubiquitous now.
They're finally in production, clearly.
But Oliver T. Hinton on Facebook is asking what my go-to lens is to shoot at auto shows. I didn't shoot anything at this year's auto show because I don't have a camera right now. But
oh, there is that. Why? Was it stolen?
Yeah, it was, actually. Funny you should ask. I was using a Canon 6D camera body with a 24 to 105 lens, which gives you a good range of you get some zoom, you get some wide. It's not the fastest lens out there, so it's kind of tricky with some of the low light, but it's a pretty flexible lens to work with.
That's cool.
That's what my go-to was for that.
Well, guys, we will leave things there. Thank you a million for your questions, honestly. Thank you for the support of the show and all your questions and your debates. It really makes a difference just from you guys engaging with the show. We really appreciate it. And I really am going to release the Corvette film announcement to everybody. Todd is just very busy right now. We're locking picture, getting a lot of things done. We're gonna land. We're gonna cross the finish line on this, and it's gonna be one of those films that I cannot wait to share with all of you. So I hope you really enjoy it. But look for those announcements here in another week or so.
It's been a fight.
Oh my gosh!
But of all the rough cuts I've seen so far, it's gonna look so good and be so worth it. It's gonna be so worth
it. We keep going back and forth, and I know Todd's buried down in. He's so close to it. He's sending us rough cuts, and so we'll step away and add our feedback and commentary and make changes. Even one of the guys who has actually helped co-produce the film, he's a Corvette guru. He's kind of the guy that GM calls when they need to know stuff about the Corvette. He's that guy.
Yeah.
And so we've had him as technical advisor, and we've been sending stuff to him, and so he's been giving us great feedback. And it's a struggle, but all this footage whittled down into a 103-minute film. It's going to be quite the epic throwdown, and it does include the 2019 ZR1. Anyway, I'll leave it there. Thank you guys a million. Looking forward to next time. Cheers.